The Supreme Court recently issued its decision in the case Mayo Collaborative Services versus Prometheus Labs. In a unanimous 9-0 ruling, the justices concluded that Prometheus's process for personalized medicine is not eligible for patent protection. Finnegan partner Denise DeFranco joins us now to discuss the court's decision and its implications for the future. First of all, Denise, can you provide a brief summary of the issues involved in Mayo versus Prometheus, and why is it significant for IP law?
The main issue in this case is whether a certain type of invention is eligible for patent protection under the United States law. The invention at issue has to do with a method of optimizing therapeutic efficacy for a particular type of drug. The drug is thiopurine, which treats an autoimmune disease such as Crohn's disease. And the inventors discovered a certain range of metabolites of that drug that are effective to treat patients. Over a certain concentration of metabolite in the bloodstream could have harmful side effects, and below a certain concentration of metabolite in the bloodstream could indicate a need to increase the dose for that particular patient. Now, that particular invention is important, and the eligibility of that particular invention for patent protection is important because it relates to a whole class of inventions in the area of diagnostics and personalized medicine. If the patent system is not available to inventions in these particular industries, the incentive to invest in research will be diminished, and we won't have advances in science in that area.
Denise, seems like in the past the court has been sharply divided in cases involving the question of what can be patented. In this case, were you surprised by the unanimous decision?
Actually, I was not surprised that it was unanimous. During oral argument, all of the justices expressed some skepticism about whether or not the claim, the invention at issue, should have received a patent. What surprised me, though, is that the court was unanimous in its analysis. The Supreme Court allowed the Department of Justice, the Solicitor General, to make an argument in this case, and one of the principal points the Solicitor General made is that Section 101 of the patent statute is not the section of the statute that should have prevented the patent in this case from issuing. The other sections of the patent statute, Section 102 that requires novelty and Section 103 that requires non-obviousness, should have been provisions of the statute that precluded patentability. So it surprised me that none of the justices accepted the argument that the Solicitor General was making, and that all of them agreed that Section 101, or patent eligibility, was the provision of the patent statute that precluded patentability for this particular invention.
The Mayo decision represents a departure from the court's usual stance that the scope of patentable subject matter is extremely broad. Will this apparent shift by the full court signal the need for some kind of clarification from Congress?
I certainly do, and I'm quite sure that the pharmaceutical and biotechnology organizations in the world have already mobilized their armies of lobbyists to start getting Congress to consider changing the effects of the Prometheus decision. It's a little bit unfortunate that we just missed the opportunity to get something swept into the America Invents Act, the AIA. It does raise some concerns in my mind about how quickly we, the patent community, will be able to get new law adopted since it just happened.
What impact will the court's focus on the natural phenomenon exception to patentable subject matter have on other technology areas, say, such as computer software and signal processing?
I actually do think it will have an effect on other areas. Obviously, the amount of the effect is yet to be seen. But because the way the decision is written, it actually will implicate other technologies. And let me explain. What the Supreme Court did is basically allow a quick peek at these other requirements of patentability, the novelty requirement, non-obviousness requirement, in determining whether or not a particular invention is eligible for patent protection in the first place. And so I think in deciding eligibility questions in the other areas, in other industries, for example, software inventions and signal processing inventions, the analysis under 101 is going to be different than it was before, in the sense that the patent office in deciding to issue patents or district courts in deciding whether or not patents that have previously issued are valid now have to think about whether or not the particular steps in the method are novel and non-obvious themselves.
Does the court's reasoning in this Mayo decision bring any clarity to the issue of patentable subject matter, or will it just add to the uncertainty?
Well, I think it adds to the uncertainty quite a bit, and here's how. I think It adds to uncertainty, particularly in the context of inventions that relate to laws of nature like this one, in two different ways. And I think it adds to uncertainty with respect to other categories of invention in the way I just described, which is to say, how is this analysis going to be done? How much do we have to look at novelty and non-obviousness in deciding patent eligibility? But particularly in the context of inventions related to laws of nature, the court framed the issue as this. It's Hornbook law that a law of nature is not eligible, and that an application of a law of nature is eligible. In this case, the court wrestled with how much needs to be added to an invention directed to a law of nature to transform it from an ineligible law of nature to an eligible application of a law of nature. Now, the Supreme Court gave a few hints in its decision as to what is not enough to transform a law of nature into an application of a law of nature, and it only gave us a few tiny, tiny hints about what is enough. In particular, the court said that new drugs will be eligible, and the court said that new ways of using an existing drug will be eligible. But it will take some time to wrestle with what are the additional limitations that need to be added to a law of nature to make it eligible for patenting. But I think a more, even more fundamental issue that's now, I would say, uncertain is what is a law of nature in the first place? Now, the Supreme Court skipped over that question altogether. It assumed that the correlation that the Prometheus inventors came up with, that above a certain concentration causes harmful side effects and that below a certain concentration is not therapeutic. But I would say that that correlation itself is not a law of nature. What is a law of nature is that our bodies metabolize the drug into the metabolite in the first place. Now, the court didn't wrestle with that question. It just assumed that the correlation is a law of nature. And a part of the reason I think that's a problem here is even in this case, Mayo argued that it should be allowed to use the invention of Prometheus because it wanted to improve on the correlation. It wanted to tweak the numbers and say it's not the concentration that Prometheus claimed that causes a harmful side effect. It's a different number. And I would suggest to you that very argument, which the Supreme Court accepted, establishes the fact that the correlation itself is not a law of nature. So I do think that we're going to wrestle over time with what falls within the class of a law of nature in the first place.
Our guest has been Denise DeFranco, a partner at Finnegan, one of the largest IP law firms in the world. For more commentary on intellectual property news and issues, to listen to other podcasts, and to receive additional information on the firm, please visit www.finnegan.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Finnegan.